Welcome to the John Gambling Show with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Here we go. It's a Friday on the John Gambling Show. Mayor Mike here in Studio 4. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Hot outside.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, but better. And incidentally, Con Ed has actually done a pretty good job over these days. They had some feeders out yesterday. There's about 3,000 homes that don't have power at the moment, hopefully back this morning sometime. But once again, while it's not going to be as hot as it was the last couple of days and over the weekend because businesses are closed, it's a lot easier for the system to handle it. But it's a good idea to only at night run your dishwasher and washer dryer because there's less electricity used then and more available. But also, it's very hot out there, light clothing, and drink a lot of water. And you might stop in on anybody that's homebound.
There's plenty of electricity. The problem is, as I understand it, the fact that the pipe, the cables, which are, think of it as a pipe, just can't get enough through them.
Well,
is that it?
It's yes and no. I mean, we do, assuming you don't have a failure of a major generating plant, and Con Ed incidentally doesn't make electricity anymore. They sold that off. They are a distributor.
Right.
Some of the power comes from long ways away, although there's big losses when you try to ship power very long distances, and so it's relatively inefficient. But our electricity, we have enough generating as long as everything works. What happens in very hot days when you use a lot of power, the cables get hotter and hotter and hotter, and then sometimes they burn out. And so if you have it only very hot for one day, really not a problem. You could have problems, but it's not from this. 2 days, still not a big problem. Once you get 3 or 4 days of very hot weather, particularly during the week when there's a lot of electricity used because people are at home and at business, then you start to have failures. And Con Ed has lots of backup, but every time you lose one of your backups, it's more susceptible if the next one goes out. And there is a limit to how much capacity the first cable has. So if you had two, you're not only more reliable, you are less likely to have a problem, and there's more capacity, and three is better, and four is better. And in most of these places, they have many cables. So, but just be a little bit sensitive.
I understand you have some news that you want to announce.
Yeah, the other day, Wednesday, when the city council passes a bill, and they have hearings and they debate and work with the administration on some bills, most bills, and then it comes to the mayor, and we always have hearings. I don't think we've ever had a bill without a hearing. And most times, you know, you listen and people come or are in favor of it and almost nobody's against it. And every once in a while you have some people that really care and are against a bill. And I always think that, you know, I'd like to listen to them and I'd like to understand what they say. I don't want anybody to think we don't hold hearings just to be a rubber stamp. And in this case, there was a bill which was really sponsored by Julissa Ferraris, who's a great younger city councilwoman. And I just didn't understand it. And I said, I'm not going to sign it today. I told everybody I will probably sign this by Friday, but I want to go back and understand it more. And everybody's shocked. Oh, you know, no, I mean, that's what hearings are about. You want people to think you listen. That doesn't mean that you have to agree with them, but you take their arguments. And I went back to my staff and said, look, this person speaking said this. What's our version of it, and why are they wrong and we are right, whatever. And we talked to Julissa and some of her city council compatriots. It was a bill about sex trafficking that the council passed. Now, nobody's in favor of sex trafficking, but it is the way the process is supposed to work, and some people expressed concerns. Some of the taxi drivers thought they'd have to decide who was a prostitute or not when they pick them up. And I pointed out, in this day and age, you know, our young people go out clubbing and they wear very risque outfits.
Yeah, you said this last Friday.
Yeah, and nothing wrong with that. But, you know, you can't have a taxi driver decide who is and who isn't. Now, the truth of the matter is, the current TLC rules already prohibit drivers from refusing a fare based on appearance or dressing, but if the taxi driver thinks that he might get prosecuted, you're not sure what he's going to do. Anyways, what we're going to do is we have educational and training, which comes out of this bill. That's a good thing in the bill. And so the answer to the question of how does a driver know if a passenger prostitute, driver doesn't have to know and shouldn't decide. There's no penalty for transporting a prostitute or a decoy, but only for knowingly engaging in a sex trafficking operation. That's already against the law, and anybody convicted, you go to jail and you lose your license. And what this bill does is it adds a $10,000 fine on those drivers who are convicted of felony sex trafficking. Now, felony sex trafficking, police arrest you, DA prosecutes, it really has nothing to do with city government. This just adds a penalty. And I think more than anything else, it's the fact that people will now know and talk about it. So maybe taxi drivers will behave the way you want. And so I'm going to sign the bill. And we have the councilwoman.
We do.
Jalissa Ferraris. Jalissa, good morning.
Good morning.
You want
Thank
to say something?
I'm very happy that this is finally happening today.
Well, the more I read it and the more I talked about it, the better I think your idea was.
Thank you. And it really is the bill. This bill is not for drivers to be discouraged in picking up women as chair of women's issues. I would never want a woman not to be picked up on if she's hailing a cab. But it really is for unscrupulous drivers that hide behind the license and are using these young girls as young as 12 to deliver them to John's. And this is to be able to add another level of protection against these men and women that could be trafficking young women. And I think it's just another layer to be able to fight against sex trafficking.
Jalissa, obviously you have become aware that this is a fairly significant problem. How would you quantify that? How big a problem is this?
You know, I think in the majority of these hardworking drivers in the industry, it's not the majority of drivers. But however, when you have a young girl who's being driven to 30, 40, 50 Johns a night, it is a very big problem. So all we need is a couple of bad apples to really ruin the lives of some young girls. And these are young girls that always felt that they may have had the opportunity to run away from their trafficker, but it was the driver that was keeping them kind of imprisoned and ensuring that they wouldn't run away.
Melissa, or Jalissa, as we are speaking, I am signing the bill.
And I can attest to the fact that
22nd day of June 2012, Michael R. Bloomberg.
And that is a first. We have not had a bill signed here in
it is the first. I'm going to save the pen for you.
Thank you. Jalissa, next week.
Make sure go to Hader. She'll have it.
I will. And thank you again. And I just want to thank all the advocates and Speaker Quinn. Came out of months of hearings, and this is a good day for the women of New York City.
Good.
All right,
Jalissa. Have a good weekend.
Thank you very much. All right, Mr. Mayor, why don't I take a break right here, 16 minutes after 8 o'clock. And coming up, we're going to get to Mayor Michael Bloomberg and John Gambling and you together here at WOR, 20 minutes after 8 o'clock Friday. All right. It was here. It was gone. It's back again. I'm talking about teacher evaluation. Bill passed just yesterday afternoon up in Albany. I think this is probably not the best of ideas. Your reaction to the passage?
Well, number one, there is no evaluation system.
It doesn't exist.
It does not exist. We have this, essentially the same thing that we had the last time around from a couple of years ago. You have an evaluation system if the cities and the unions can agree. And the union has shown no signs of anything that is a real evaluation system. And in all fairness, that's their job, that no matter whether they're good or bad. The union is not there to help our students. Don't ever think that. And in fact, if you're a union member, you should... And saying you're here for the students. The union is there for its members to protect them. When they're sex offenders, they protect them. When they're criminals, they protect them. They do anything to protect them. They don't focus on the students. They just use the students as a ploy. So there is no evaluation system. And if we can't come to an evaluation system, the city's going to lose hundreds of millions of dollars.
What's the time frame on that?
The fall. And that's going to next year is going to be a real bear in terms of how much money we have. So that's going to mean fewer employees. I don't know how we get there and where, but it's going to be a lot less money. But let's assume you had an evaluation system, and there is some data that this does cover. The good news is the system says that the law says that there is general data which is going to be put out. So in the case of the school, you'll know that five teachers got this rating, two teachers got that rating, whatever, but you don't know the names. But it lets you look at it, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's the governor and the legislature deserve credit for doing that. That's a good move. Then there is the ability for the parent to get information about the teacher in front of their child at the moment. The real problem with that is you really want to have information about what the teachers that your child might be going and be have in front of them next year, because you got to decide whether to send your kid to that school or look for other options. There's private schools, there's religious-based schools, there's homeschooling. There's a lot of things that you could do. You could move. And if you don't have that information, you can't make those decisions. And there's no provision in this to let you find out the ratings for the teachers that your child might be put in whose class your child might be put. So that's the biggest flaw here. This is fundamentally, it's nice to know the rating of your teacher, but what do you do with it?
If it has so no much context, if you don't know the top or the bottom or the difference.
Well, but you could tell because you'd know all of the things. The real answer is you're already in the middle of the school year. And you can't move your child then, so it's of no real use. What you want to know is where your child, the options for your child for next year, and that is not being put out because your child is not in those classes yet. Now, the other thing is this law is really very badly flawed for a city like New York City. In New York City, most of our parents work, or a very big percentage of them, to go and to take time out to go to the principal's office, just not possible for most. A lot of them, their command of the English language or their experience in dealing with bureaucracies isn't good, so that they don't quite know how to do this. The framers of the bill, who knows what was in the back of their mind, but the bottom line is, as constituted, unless we do something actively, proactively, very few people would ever get the information.
And you could do it on the phone, but I can foresee, you know, the usual push four, push five, closed.
Let me tell you what we're going to do. We are going to have our schools call every single parent. Now, we're talking about fourth grade to eighth grade, and we're talking about not all of the teachers even in those, because there's some special ed and stuff that doesn't apply to. We are going to call and get on the phone every parent. Now, one of the reasons we are supposed to have an emergency number, but numbers change. You change your cell phone, you change your number, and we never really keep that up to date. And so for safety reasons, that's a good idea. We're going to call, make sure we get you, and we will tell you that you are entitled to this information. And if you want it, just say yes or no. Ask us right now, and then we will send it to you.
Won't give it to them on the phone.
I think we can give them to them right on the phone as well, but we'll also send it to them. So we'll make sure that every parent gets the information, whether or not they would have called or not. But we're going to proactively do something so that the parents get this information. Having said that, I still come back to it's not the information they really need. And if you wanted to give the parents that information, you would do a bill, a very different bill.
Do you think that there will ever be an evaluation put together? I mean, at every turn, somebody throws a bump in the road.
Nothing is easy. Nothing in government is easy. But you see places where people say enough and they fight back. And this is an opportunity for people to get together and just call. They should call their state senators and state assembly people and say, this is wrong and I'm going to work for your opponent.
The decriminalization of marijuana as related to stop and frisk and the suggestion that the governor wanted to do, that was turned down, or that was not, that,
yeah,
it was
but,
not acted upon. I'm just
it
curious.
Was not acted. It doesn't mean anything for the city, because 6 or 8 months ago, Ray Kelly had already told his police officers to not arrest people if they have a small amount of marijuana in their pocket, even if they take it out. Because a cop says, let me see what's in your pocket. Out it comes, and they say, oh, you're displaying it in public, therefore they slap the cuffs on you. We stopped that practice, and that's what this law, and I thought it was a good law. The governor deserves credit for trying to get it done. The fact that it didn't get done is not his fault, but it doesn't change anything in New York City, because we're doing what the law would have required you to do anyways.
How about the speed camera law? Again, it didn't make it. It fell by the wayside.
We still have problems with red light cameras at corners. People get killed from people running red lights, and we can put the cameras in, incidentally. There's no law that says the city
can't find people.
We can't find people. That's right. I think it was out of the 70s when the financial crisis, the state took away the city's right to fine people unless they acquiesce. So you can't fine anybody. Now, whether or not you could have the cameras and then we'll put up their names and pictures someplace, maybe we can shame them and we should look at that.
No,
because if Ollie's not going to let us do this stuff, we got to save lives. And we now have the fewest traffic deaths per year that we've ever had. And we started keeping records back in 1916. But there's still people dying, and that's our responsibility.
Kathleen Rice tried that out in Nassau County with DWI arrestees, putting up the wall of shame.
What happened?
Well, the courts came in and said you can't do that.
Oh, well, so then maybe we can't do that.
No pictures.
But there's no reason not to try unless the court, wind it. Everybody else sues us. Why shouldn't we try?
I understand. Let me ask you about a continuing issue. Cell phones in school. Last week we had a truck that was a storage thing that was stolen. And how do you fix this complicated? How do you leave
your phones at home.
Well, mom will argue that my baby needs it, and the kids will say,
fine.
I need it too.
I know they do. They are not appropriate in school. The child is supposed to be paying attention to the teacher, not texting, tweeting, Facebooking. You have a big liability with pornography. The city would get sued right away, and the teachers can't go around and look and see what's on your cell phone or on your iPad. These devices do not belong in the school. If we want to have technology in front of the student, we'll provide the technology. We'll limit it to what they can do with it, make sure that it's appropriate for the schools. But, it is a problem. If you want to carry it, you've got to find some place to store it, and that's going to cost money. And you say, well, they have to have it. I don't know about you, but when I grew up, we didn't have air-conditioned schools, which I got some grief about the other day, because not all schools are air-conditioned. And we didn't have cell phones, and we survived very nicely, thank you.
Yeah, the air-conditioning in schools, again, both of those situations are life has changed, and I'm not arguing for or against, but life has changed, and, expectations are what they are.
And we'd like to air-condition all the schools. It's very expensive. We only have so much money.
Your new schools, though, that are built.
Yeah, sure. But if you want us to do something, just tell us where the money's got to come from. What other programs should we going to take the money out of? And incidentally, I want to be sure to introduce you to the people who like that program, and you guys go out in the backyard and settle it, the old-fashioned schoolyard.
I completely understand. Mr. Mayor, let me take another break here. Joe Bartlett's on the other side, and I'd like to... Again, if you've got a question, you better get in line, 800-321-0710. Always a busy morning. Lots of people, lots of demand and not much supply. Don't have too many lines. I had a great interview with your former resignation, Adrian Benepi, from the Parks Department.
Adrian did a great job.
A lot of experience.
One of the commissioners that worked his way all the way up. Ray Kelly, twice to the top. I'm trying to think who else. Our sanitation commissioner,
John Doherty, all the way
to the top, both times, because he's been sanitation commissioner twice. Adrian, I think there's one other. Adrian did a great job. He's moving on to try to spread what we've done here to other cities, and that's great. It's very flattering.
Did you replace him?
We've given the job to a woman, Veronica White, who's worked for us. She's been running the Center for Economic Opportunity. Great manager, enthusiastic as anybody you'll ever meet, and she'll do a phenomenal job. And Adrian built a great department, so there's lots and lots of good people. And Veronica really, after 10 years, nothing wrong with having some new blood, and this is a good opportunity. It's a great opportunity for us to
and the momentum in the parks
and it's a great opportunity for us to use Veronica and to give other people the thought that they can move up and find other jobs in other agencies. I don't have to get pigeonholed in their own one. And Adrian will go on and push what we've done to lots of people.
Funds for the 9/11 Museum. Both Governor Cuomo and Christie, I understand, have written letters to the federal government.
Yeah, that's
for
good.
Funds.
We've been trying for a long time. Our commitment, basically, I think we have the money from the federal government, but they've got to take it away from something else, and so that's the issue. Where do you find the money? That's the that's a ways that Congress has said we're going to stop the expansion of the federal government. We'll do new things, but we have to cancel something else. Nobody ever wants to have anything canceled, so it's very difficult to do. And having the two governors write a letter is useful. And we talked about it. And we talked about it down at the World Trade Center when the president came up for Flag Day, if you remember. We talked about it then. I talked to Andrew, and I'm glad that Governor Christie also signed on.
Do you think you're going to get it, or is that just a big question?
You know, they supply, they do this amount of money for the memorial in Oklahoma City and lots of others. So there's certainly a pattern. That's where this amount came from. It's the same as others. You know, if you call your senator and congressman, that'll be helpful. Schumer has worked very hard trying to get it for us.
I see that the question of West Side storefronts has risen its head again. Now, you and I talked about it months and months ago, maybe a year or so
ago.
Yeah,
I don't know where that stands. City planning
wants to reduce or make sure that it doesn't get too big, I guess.
Right. I mean, the idea is that you only have a limited amount of storefront at ground level. If you could get stores to take a smaller amount of that and build up or down, you'd be able to get a lot more stores in the same block.
You don't care about size of store, total size of store. It's just the ground floor.
It's that space, yeah. And I think there's a lot of communities community interest that would like that. I don't think you should prohibit anybody. And so I don't think you should hurt their business by reducing their footprint. It's just where that footprint is, and it would be in everybody's interest to be able to use a level below ground and a level above. And some of these stores, if you go look at Time Warner Center and Columbus Circle, they have a multiple-story mall, if you will, and it's been phenomenally successful. And people say, oh, you know, it doesn't work in New York unless you're on the ground floor. That's not true. And if you have an entrance on the ground floor, that's much better than if you don't. But even if you didn't and had up there, there's a good example. And there's a big mall that Macy's is going into up in the Bronx. That'll be multiple stories as well.
We've been talking this week about a group of people right next door to us here that are protesting Trinity Church because they believe that this comes out of Occupy Wall Street. And one of their guys was arrested and sentenced to 45 days in jail or something for misbehavior. And they're demonstrating out here by not doing anything, even physical. They're just sitting. But they're sleeping on the streets. They're there all night long, and they're sleeping on cardboard. And they're there. And I'm just I was under the impression that's illegal.
It certainly is illegal if you block traffic. And there's a fine line. I'll have to take a look and ask the police commissioner. There's a very specific set of rules of
the
what
police
you can.
Are there, so they're aware of
right.
all of this.
Right? I mean, also, you know, if you just say wait a day or so and it'll go away, that's another tactic that, you know, it just makes it's a practical answer. People say purists say, oh no, you should go and throw them in the slammer or whatever the law allows. I'll talk to the police and see.
Let's see.
They don't accost you. You know what they're really doing? They're sitting there waiting to turn on the radio to listen to the John Gambling
Show.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. Those are not my fans. I can assure you, at all after what I've said about them in the past. Dennis Walcott, again, outraged, appropriately so, about more accusations of sex in the schools or, you know, between faculty, staff, and
one
students.
Time I said to Dennis, you know, you can't catch a break. Somebody was arrested, another teacher or something. And Dennis very wisely said, you know, look, we have 75,000 teachers. There's no city in America with 75,000 citizens where somebody doesn't get arrested every day. So, you know, you got to put this in perspective. The vast, vast, vast bulk of our teachers are act appropriately, are competent, dedicated, care, love doing the job, and do a good job. There's always aberrations. Unfortunately, those aberrations tar the reputation of everybody, so, you know, nobody's in favor of this. The problem we have is that the arbitrators and then the courts on top of them keep us from removing teachers that should not be in front of a child from that position. Nobody talks about firing them. That's many-year process. It isn't worth talking about. It takes so long. I don't know if you ever fix that. So the city pays people to not do anything. Fortunately, it's a very small number of people. Here, it's a very small number of people. We just want to get them out of the classroom, and the courts say, oh, well, you know, there's extenuating circumstances, or it's not enough, and that sort of thing. Some of these teachers that you read about, and maybe there's somebody that's innocent, and the press has ginned it up, or the report was wrong, or somebody's out to get them, so it's not clear until they have the day in court. But there clearly are people whose behavior is totally inappropriate. You wouldn't want your child in front of them. I wouldn't want mine. And we've just got to keep fighting this battle and stopping it. And at some point, you got to the state legislature has got to step in, or the courts have got to step in and say this just cannot go on.
I couldn't agree with you more. You made a promise about the Barclays Center and people in the neighborhood getting the first shot at some of the jobs.
Well, when we announced
there.
The opening of the Barclays Center, Forest City Ratner, which is the developer, and the city promised to try and recruit people from the neighborhood area in Brooklyn, including New York City Housing Authority, public housing residents, for the 2,000 or so jobs. There's 100 full-time, and then there's about 1,240 full-time equivalents, because you need people like ushers and that sort of thing when there's an event, and when there's not an event, there's not a job there for them. The City Small Business Services Department, NYCHA, and Forest City have gone above and beyond the call, I think, with job fairs and church visits, and we've had something like 19,000 people apply for the jobs. The first interviews are Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Almost half the applicants are NYCHA residents. Almost all the applicants are Brooklyn residents. So you should call. If you just call 311, they'll tell you where and what the hours are.
All right. When is that scheduled to open up? Do you remember?
The Barclays Center.
Yeah, the center.
For the next
NBA
basketball season.
All right. So coming up in the fall.
Yeah.
Yeah, I go by it every once in a while. It's quite an impression.
It's going to be great. And it's another venue to stage other kinds of events in the city. Give some competition to the existing ones. That's good for everybody. But history shows that every time we add another center for performing arts,
it gets
people
full.
Coming. It's full, right? It's not hurt anybody's business so far.
All right. Reports of crime up in 49 of 72 precincts.
I mean,
what was Ray Kelly tell you?
We're always worried. Some of it's just noise in the data. It's so low that the percentages go up and down. They seem like big percentages when it's a very small number of crimes. Some of it's depend on the weather or reporting or whatever. We are worried about it, but not. I don't think there's any reason to think that there's a start of going back to the bad old days or crime. We are going to continue to do this. The most important thing is an article in one of the papers today about criminals having a common gun. They leave
what
it
does
at
that
home.
Mean?
It's stored in somebody's apartment, and if they need a gun, they go take it out. They
it's
lend
like
it out.
It's like renting a car, like a
right.
zip
they,
car.
They share
it's a zip gun.
Gun. At least we've got to stop that, but at least what it says is a lot fewer people are carrying them on the streets. That is what all of this proactive policing has done. It is people say, oh, well, you're not getting any more guns when you stop people. Yeah, the ultimate objective would be that we never get a gun. It's like, you raise cigarette taxes and the revenue's going to fall. Wouldn't that be wonderful if nobody smoked? Yes, that's exactly right. And these are the same people that complain, oh, you're just doing it for the revenue. No, we're not doing it for revenue. No, we're not doing it to get the guns. We're trying to prevent the guns from being out there. I've always called our firefighters and police officers first preventers rather than first responders, because in the end, that's the ultimate job. You know, the firefighters go out and they, a very big part of their job is inspection and making sure people are trained and have the appropriate devices and a standpipe in a big building and smoke detectors and that sort of stuff. And if they do that, maybe there wouldn't be any fires, which would be the ultimate. Same thing with crime. If you could keep people from stopping crime, yeah, we wouldn't arrest anybody. Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Are you concerned at all about what's going up on 129th Street where they have the block cordoned off and you've got to show?
No, I mean, we have, look, there's some threats. We take them seriously. And if people are going to say, if you get information that there's likely to be a shooting on the street, what do you expect us to do? Sit around, let them have the shot, and then arrest somebody? I don't think so. Our job is, once again, prevention, and that's exactly what the police are doing.
You've said on Stop and Frisk, don't end it, maybe needs to be amended. What do you mean by that? Is there
parentheses? We're doing more training and more reporting and supervision. kinds of things to make sure that we stop when appropriate. But it's when the people say, oh, you're stopping too many young people, for example, you know, wouldn't it be wonderful if young people had the same crime rate that older people do? Or you're stopping too many men. Wouldn't it be wonderful if men, boys had the same crime rate as women or girls? But that's not the real world. It is young men where we've had the biggest crime for a long time, and we've got to do something about it, and that's what we're doing. And today, you are so much safer today. When I was in Rio the other day for this environmental thing, I went down just for a day for Tuesday to Rio de Janeiro. And
you wouldn't
Brazil.
Put the word safe next to Rio, from what I understand.
It's a lot better than it used to be, but no. I mean, there's a lot of bulletproof cars. People lock themselves in, a lot of private security guards. And Rio, they've got a good young mayor, and he really has made a big difference. But no, New York is the only city I know where a woman could walk in any neighborhood during the day and not have to look over her shoulder. And most neighborhoods at night, the sun is still tough. But we are so much safer. And, you know, it's unless you travel the world, people don't recognize that.
Why can't they get a handle of it on it in places like Rio? I'm not going to just focus on
you're not going to do it overnight. There's never been a focus on it. It's always, I think, that some neighborhoods, they put a lot of police there. They're safe, and so they don't care what happens elsewhere. In New York City, we care what happens every place. And Ray Kelly's tactic of we deploy our police officers to what he calls problem places to go after problem people. So we go to the places where there is a lot of crime, not to the neighborhoods where the people can support an election campaign or work on the polls for somebody. That's, in fact, what happens is the people that scream the loudest and know how to scream get the protection, and that is not necessarily where the problem is. It's fascinating across the country, maybe even around the world. Oh, we just built what New York has. We have Comstat, our own Comstat. Comstat is simply a collection, storage, and display system for data. If you don't use it, it's meaningless. And nobody wants to use it because that's where the rubber meets the road, where you really have to say, I'm not going to put a cop in your neighborhood. I'm going to put him over in this other neighborhood. Why? There's no crime in your neighborhood, and there is crime over there. And you say, oh, well, the crime will come back here. That's not the way it works. So you should go where the crime is, and then you go after.
And you catch up with yourself, ultimately. I mean,
if you'd reduce the crime, you'll reduce it every place, and that's why the city is safe. You know, it's really amazing. People forget what used to go on in this city. You know, if you go back 20 years maybe, people carried, used to call it kids who on the way to school, mugging money.
Oh, to give to the bad guy.
Yeah, I mean, when'd you hear? Or you used to see this a red bar across the steering wheel in cars, the club or whatever it's called. When's the last time you saw that?
You used that a couple of weeks ago, and yeah. it was so illustrative of exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, no radio.
Everybody,
signs.
I sold on the radio here, you know, tens of thousands of the clubs, right. And fortunately,
I wonder where they are now.
It's kind of like the tax revenues from cigarettes. Fortunately, they're gone, right?
Right.
Exactly.
Don't need. Right. And everybody's got a radio.
Yeah.
And nobody puts a sign up, no radio in this
country. Absolutely.
Kind.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we got a whole host of folks on the telephone here that would like to ask you some questions. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, John Gambling, and now it is your turn. Mr. Mayor, grab your earphone right there, and we'll go to the phones. And Elizabeth is in Manhattan. You're up first. Hi.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
But I've called 311 about these problems before. I live in Washington Heights near the George Washington Bridge. Now, the drivers know that when the light turns red, they have a few seconds before the light turns green the other way. And there are always two to three cars that zoom through that red light.
She needs a red light
camera.
You know,
Elizabeth, there are people getting killed all the time from people running through red lights. And unfortunately, we cannot get Albany. In all fairness, they've authorized some more. But, you know, we have thousands and thousands of corners, and we don't have the money for thousands and thousands of cops standing on every corner. Using technology, you would think, would be the most efficient thing. It would stop people from breaking the law. And we just can't get Albany to give us the authority to just do whatever number makes sense for us, and why somebody from upstate should be deciding how many red light cameras we have or speeding cameras, another good idea. Only in the crazy world of Albany. But Elizabeth, call your state senator, call your assembly person, and say, this is a problem, and I want you to do something about it. Calling your city council person doesn't make any difference, because the city council and the mayor can't do anything about this. But if you call them, and if you want their phone numbers and names, just call 311, and they'll you tell them where you live, and they'll figure out who you should call.
All right, let's try Dan here, line 5. Dan, go ahead with the mayor.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm just calling. The mayor made a statement earlier in the program. He said that the unions don't care about the kids' education.
Well, the individual members certainly, I'm sure, do care, but that's not their job. The union is there, and if I were a member of that union, I would make sure I would yell and scream. If their job is to get me, if I'm a member of that union, more compensation, better working conditions, fewer hours. Nothing wrong with that. I've always supported unions. I think the city is basically on balance a beneficiary of many of the municipal unions that are well run, and it's negotiating with each person in an agency would be virtually impossible. So you have somebody that speaks for all of them. But that's their job, is to protect the members. And you see that. That's why they fight to protect teachers that you and I, John, think shouldn't be in front of our children, because they are accused of, or even in many cases, they get caught doing it, touching or having sex in school or whatever. Or photographed. You've seen these gory pictures in the paper. And you say, well, why does the union protect them if it's not good? Nobody thinks that it's good to have those teachers in front of the class, because that's the reason the union does it. That's their job. And that doesn't mean the individual union members or even the union delegates don't care about the kids. And I'm sure, Michael Mulgrew, the president, he cares about the kids, but that's not his job. That's the city's job.
All right, got another school question from Rita. Rita, go ahead. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Mayor.
Good morning.
Bloomberg. Could you kindly clarify the role of our school superintendents in each of our boroughs in evaluating our teachers in their respective districts?
My recollection, Rita, is that the superintendents provide some oversight, and if somebody challenges an evaluation, I think they have some oversight to take a look and see whether it was right. And then eventually it gets up to the chancellor.
Principals are involved in evaluation.
Yeah, I mean,
because that's their job.
Superintendent can't evaluate. They can look at evidence, but it's the principal that's there in the class, in the school, who knows the teacher's abilities, gets a chance to observe. Talks to other teachers. Everybody has opinions, and that's the way any manager judges. You don't just make decisions willy-nilly. You try to gather evidence, and you have to be on site to do it.
All right, Mr. Mayor, that's going to do it.
One more thing, John.
Yep.
Key to the City, Johan Santana tonight.
Oh,
I'm
really?
Going to give him one, yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, big deal.
Absolutely.
I even know him on a first-name basis.
Which door does it fit?
We can't figure that out.
Have fun with Johan and the rest of them out there. And that's going to be it for this hour with the mayor. But we've got lots more to go, including David Gregory and more.